Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Bob Bongiorno to the broadcast. Bob is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Automatic Data Processing Employer Services. Bob joined ADP in September 2002 and is responsible for the development of all payroll, HR, benefits, and time and labor management products for the $5 billion Employer Services Division. He leads a department of over 1,200 IT associates with an annual budget of over $100 million. At ADP, he has significantly improved the reliability of the company's internet product suite, reducing downtime by 92% over a two-year period. He's also introduced the use of service-oriented architecture to enable integration across the many disparate human resources applications that are sold by the company. In 2006, Bob led ADP to a ranking of number 2 in the Information Week 500 list of the top innovators in business technology. Prior to his time at ADP, Bob spent 12 years at United Airlines, where he worked with business units to develop an overall strategy and project plan to determine how best to leverage new technologies in the future airport environment. While at United, he pioneered the use of parallel processing technology in areas of yield management and crew scheduling. Bob holds both a Master of Science and a Bachelor of Science degree in Industrial and System Engineering from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute. I recently spoke with Bob in his office in New Jersey, and our conversation touched on world-class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed the virtual workforce, Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed ADP's much-lauded use of service-oriented architecture, as well as a variety of other topics. Well, Bob Bongiorno, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. It's great to have you here. I appreciate you taking this time. I wanted to talk to you, Bob. There's an emerging trend among IT departments for IT to be sort of a center for innovation. And I know that as you have headed IT for ADP Employer Services, your organization has actually been referred to as R&D. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the what's behind that. It seems to be in some ways connected to this whole notion that IT can be a driver of research and development, of innovation, of truly value-added products, which is not necessarily the norm across all IT departments, but I wonder if you can talk about how that's been applied at ADP and how that's thought about.
Part of our role, is largely is to be a business partner with our various, or be a partner with our various business units. And, part of that we looked at to bring innovation, find new technologies that fit the business, make suggestions for the business, whether it be on the product side, on the service side, on how to reduce costs. So yeah, clearly, I think the R&D title fits. We're not here just to be an audit taker.
Yes,
we're here to be a partner, and that's how we've been trying to do it. We've brought in many things around new technologies around virtualization, around segmentation, the service-oriented architecture, how you do integration, portals, new UIs, and so forth. Mm-hmm. So we work very closely with our product marketing groups, and like I said, we're both supposed to pitch ideas in. We're not just waiting for them to write a spec for us.
Right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And I know even from across your experiences, not only at ADP, but also at United Airlines before that, you've always had, and even American Airlines before that, that you've had roles that have been obviously IT-centric. You've grown up within IT departments, but very much business-focused roles or business-driven roles. And so it seems like it's very much in your DNA to draw from the business their needs and apply IT solutions to those needs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's great. Well, good. I wonder if you can take a step back, Bob, and as you think about the year or two ahead, what are some of the trends that you see emerging in IT that you're planning on taking advantage of, or that you see as particularly exciting for IT executives more broadly speaking?
We always have there's always an ongoing focus of security on security.
Yes.
I think that's one of our top things, particularly a company like this where you would. We are holding a lot of data. So security is always a focus. We're always keeping an eye out for that.
Mm-hmm.
Second thing would be around virtualization.
Yes.
We think this is a big opportunity for us to reduce costs. Again, as a service, as a software provider, as a software as a service provider, how we manage our costs and how we do that is important. We believe, given that our client base is very, very big, that we need, you know, certain segments. We can't really put an entire product or service and let it run without partition. So the idea of virtualizing and partitioning this into different buckets where we protect reliability and allow us to go to 24/7 and allow us to pilot software more effectively is an important thing for us. And you can do that just via throwing hardware at it, or potentially you can do it through virtualization. So I think that's one of the trends that we're, you know, following closely and moving on. Plus integration, which is really where our service-oriented architecture comes in.
Yes.
We continue to tighten the integration between our different services and make it look like it's one one product to our users. And that's an important strategy for us. And I think a final thing that may be, you know, coming up is really is customer experience monitoring.
Okay. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. That, you know, we can know, we can look and know how the software is performing on our end, but what we really want to know is we want to know what our clients are seeing. So it's not whether the, you know, it's not just the uptime of the product or whether the service is slow or not. It's what type of service level are they getting on all their transactions and looking at how things are moving across the internet and so forth. So we are investigating several options to try and give us a better sense of what any individual customer is experiencing at any time on our software as a service model.
That's great. Very good. Very interesting stuff. And very clearly showing how the IT division within Employer Services at ADP, in fact, is investing in the sorts of things that will bring about true value for the business. Wonderful. Well, I know another another area where you've been lauded to a great degree, Bob, has been, in fact, service-oriented architecture, which you've just mentioned. In fact, in 2006, under your guidance, ADP was ranked number 2 in the Information Week 500. I wonder if you can take a few moments and talk about service-oriented architecture. What was the background? What drew you to that initially? You talk about the how it facilitates integration activities, integration of a broad company's different products and bringing them together and making it a little bit more of a seamless transition of bringing those products together. But I wonder, as some of our listeners are thinking about just now embarking on an SOA path, what are some of the lessons and insights you've drawn from that, as well as some of the things you did to ensure that it was successful at ADP?
Well, we were drawn to it largely by two things. One is we had a large disparate product set that we acquired.
Yes.
And we wanted to, you know, sell more than just payroll. We want to sell add-on things,
that's
time and labor and so forth with that. And you had to have a way of integrating it. So that was the number one driver, because service-oriented architecture allows you to integrate disparate products that may be on different platforms that you know, have different architectures, but this allows you to do the key things around that. And the second thing was around reuse. We had a lot of redundant software that where different business units had things that were doing the same basic function. So there were, out of this, you can integrate, and then you can also reduce your, you can rationalize your product set by reusing blocks of code across for different business units. So those are the two things that drove us to it.
That's wonderful. Yeah.
You know, so from what have we learned on it? It's, you know, you have to be from a, it's as much process-driven to be successful as it is architecturally driven. Once you define your architect, you still need, we found, in order to get this on time, in order to have this be reliable and have high quality, you need to really look carefully at your whole release management process, your whole development life cycle, how you test, and how you bring things together. Because, again, you have different development units doing different things. In the past, they would just release their product into production. Well, now they're dependent on other products. Now you have to test across products. So we had to revamp our whole software development lifecycle to accommodate the SOA. And that was the key learning.
That's great. It
took a while, and we got better and better at it. Now we're able to deliver it pretty reliably.
That's fantastic. Very good. and for good reason that your organization has been lauded for your successes there. I wonder if we can switch gears briefly to talk about the virtual workforce. I know that you've been a proponent for some time now of the virtual workforce and allowing various employees to work where they want. And you've spoken quite eloquently in the past about the whole notion of recruiting people where they live, and essentially rather than requiring that they come to where a company is headquartered. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your own thought process around virtual workforce, how you've applied the lessons of that, and some of the benefits you've gained.
Well, I mean, I think it allows a couple of things. It allows you to get helps you recruiting,
yes.
And then for us, a lot of it is we're going to lower cost offshore operations too, where we have India and we have Brazil. We have people in England as a development where we do acquisitions. I mean, so it's another piece that's essential. Where you do an acquisition, that's where the people are going to. That's what a development organization is for that product.
Yes.
So we have people scattered all over this country and then internationally, and we are a global company. So it fits with what we're doing. I think there's no way around it at a company like this. And I think most IT managers today, to take advantage of it, have to be really good at managing virtual organizations. The day
Yes.
of just walking out and being all your coders are right there in one place and all your testers are there sitting next to them is not going to happen anymore.
Right.
And I think the technology around the internet and the ability to teleconference and the other things that have come up, live meetings and so forth, have really enabled this to be done. And you want to take where you have a place like India where you have a significant time zone difference.
Yes.
You want to take advantage of it. So you need to watch what workload you put in different locations.
Yes.
I mean, there are things where we're doing requirements of the testing, or we're doing development to support, or something where we have specifications very tightly written. There you can deal with the time zone, and you can just ship it off. There's other stuff where we're doing iterative, where we need a closer tie to the product managers, and the thing is more live going on. Then it's easy. Then you have to watch the time zone differences a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to understand how to manage these people in disparate locations.
Yes.
And then also how to allocate the work to where the people's strengths or the organization's strengths.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And does it also mean then carving off discrete pieces of work that people can manage, as opposed to giving them piecemeal tasks that require a lot
Yes.
more coordination?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
You try and give them blocks of work that make sense for them to manage, and you try and keep them independent as you can. Again, I think smaller autonomous software units are much better than a giant bureaucracy. So you try and decentralize these things and give people as much autonomy as possible.
That makes a lot of sense. And have there been any concerns about productivity? Are there methods that you would advise organizations to undertake to make sure that people are maintain their productivity without having sort of a boss necessarily over their shoulder at all times?
Yeah, I mean, it makes it harder. Again, to the extent you can have metrics around productivity,
yep.
and that's always difficult to do.
Yep.
And it is one of the areas I think we're getting some traction on now, but it is a concern about the relative productivity of different locations.
Yes.
And it's something we watch and try and manage through.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, good. Well, Bob Bongiorno, really appreciate you taking this time and sharing some of your thoughts.
Okay. Great. Great talking to you, Pete.
Very good.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to Meta Strategies' 5 principles of world-class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our sound editor is Christian Dooley. Our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.